This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Friday. Good to be with you Friday. Matt Brett here today. We're kind of mailing it in a little bit today. Teresa Meese is going to join us from the Minnesota Central Podcast, a podcast based up in central Minnesota, where they talk about issues there and they try to get away from the politics. Actually, I'll share a little bit later on. Interesting how I came up with the idea. I wanted to have her on because the reality is we do get a very warped view of what really is going on out there because howler monkeys get the camera action. And that's – so we're going to talk to her because she's been working really hard at kind of putting forward just kind of a – the real world, what she considers to be the real world out in central Minnesota. We'll talk to her about the podcast coming up a little bit later on. Kyle Kondik as well. That's your interview, right, Brett?
Yeah. Sabato's Crystal Ball talking about what I find at least some interesting topics, how there could be some good news actually for Democrats when we look at 2022 polling. But we're also going to look at why Minnesota has stayed blue and – Trump encouraging his voters to stay home. What a great strategy.
That's it. Nothing. That is just some smart ideas. That's a smart idea. Well, it's like the guy down in Florida that's right by, you know, Mar-a-Lago who his restaurant said Democrats aren't welcome. And, well, the story is today, well, apparently he's seen a bit of a drop-off in business.
Oh, you think?
And, well, in his county went for Biden. And so he's taken down the, you know, Democrats not welcome, or, you know, if you don't support Trump, don't come in here. And he's put up this sign going, we accept vaccinated or unvaccinated, and ask if, you know, and puts out some kind of bull crud question about Biden. If you're happy with Biden doing this, well, then you don't have to come here either. I'm like, dude, man, why don't you just shut down the business? Why go through the pain? I mean, if it's going to be that bad, just shut down the business. And yeah. It's these people are not exactly smart, but it's amazing to me how much these people, I mean, that guy did that. He did that at that restaurant thinking that like 90% of the country agrees with him. That, see, everyone regrets, anyone who voted for Biden regrets it. Now everyone loves Trump because they immerse themselves in a what it's not news, it's narrative validation. They immerse themselves in online narrative validation that has nothing to do with reality. And so then all of a sudden they basically put that out there thinking to myself, won't I resonate with my customers? And next thing you know, they're getting ready to shut down. Well, what do you mean most of the people here don't like Trump? They have no clue. Did you watch any of the baseball last night?
I watched the ninth inning of it, yes. Very end.
Great game. And if you don't, okay, we're not a sports station. I'm just going to touch on this briefly because there's two parts about last night's game which I thought were hilarious. Well, not hilarious, terrifying. But still, I mean, it's one of the two. It's apples, oranges. First of all, that game was sensational. Dodgers, Giants. And the crime here, and baseball needs to fix a lot of things that were highlighted by that series and by that last inning, that ninth inning last night. But the fact that the two clearly best teams in baseball faced off in the first round after the wild card games is an absolute joke. I mean, they should not have been facing off with each other. And yeah, that's just there is no reason in the world that who was the host team? Was Milwaukee or Atlanta the host team in the first round?
Are you talking the other series?
Yeah, on the other series.
Oh, that was Atlanta and Milwaukee.
Well, yeah. But who was the home team? Was it Milwaukee or was
Milwaukee? Milwaukee had the better record.
Well, Milwaukee then should have hosted the Dodgers. Nightmares once again for them, and the Atlanta should have gone to San Francisco. They can't get out of their own way there. My wife comes down. I'm watching the game. And what's interesting, because they had the Thursday night football game on too, and of course there were multiple plays in the Thursday night football game where they had to stop the game and do a review of the game, but it kind of got a little tiresome, and the Eagles are just god-awful, so I couldn't watch too much of that. So I keep going back to the baseball game. My wife comes downstairs. She goes, oh, who's playing? I said, well, it's the Dodgers and Giants. This is the two best teams left in baseball. Unfortunately, whoever wins this game, they move on. The other team doesn't. That's a real crime, but that's how it goes. And she goes, oh, so they go into the second round, next round? I go, yes. She goes, are the Cheaters still in it? And I said, unfortunately, yes, they are. The Houston Astros are still in it. And the first thing I said to myself is, wow, Major League Baseball, if that doesn't tell you how much you've screwed up with that whole thing, that you should have, that team should have been, I'm not saying they should have been shut down, but they should have been banned from postseason action. The World Series titles they had should have been stripped from them. You knew they cheated. You know they cheated. It's not even a question. It's outright cheating. They cheated in game, and the Major League Baseball let them get away with it.
I don't get why they can't just vacate the title like they do in NCAA basketball. I mean, Gopher basketball, 1997, that season never existed for them.
Yeah, they were never the Final Four team. There was only three teams listed in the Final Four that year.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, I think that when you Major League Baseball sure did screw that up, because you cannot have cheating at that level. Just such obscene cheating. And then basically say, well, but hopefully, we've warned them. Next time, I'm sure they won't do it. Oh, of course not. Of course not. You know, you shut them down, you take the World Series titles away from them, I guarantee you, you've just sent a message. But Major League Baseball is a bunch of freaking cowards, and that's just that. And that's kind of one of the problems I have with the game right now. And they wonder why people are not in the number, you know, watching in the numbers they used to. The ninth inning of last night's game was an absolute travesty, because Major League Baseball, they have to fix the instant replay rule. Like I said, I was watching the NFL game, and if they have, you know, even a simple question, you know, someone throws a red flag out there and they challenge the play, they review it. Oh, yes, it was wrong. Yes, it was right. Whatever the case may be. The last swing. Now, I'm not saying the San Francisco Giants were going to come back and win that game. The Dodgers took the 2-1 lead in the ninth inning. So it was down to the bottom of the ninth. The Giants were the host team. And they had a man on first, I believe, at that point. And two outs. And the third strike on the third out was called on what was supposed to be a check swing. And if you don't know what a check swing is, that's when a batter tries to swing at a ball but then pulls back and tries not to let the ball. If the ball crosses the heart of the plate, right? Isn't that it? What it is? If it crosses the heart of the plate, then it's a swing. But if he stops it before the barrel of the bat crosses the center of the plate, then it's not a swing. Is that correct?
Oh, gosh. I don't know on that.
I don't know exactly where the point is. I don't know if it's the first baseline or if it's the heart of the plate. But needless to say, if they can pull back on their swing, then it's a check swing. They don't get called on the strike. So you basically they check their swing, I should say, in the case. If you watch the replay, the guy clearly did not cross the home plate with his bat. I mean, it was clearly it. He checked his swing. He did not swing. They called it a third strike. That was the end of the game. And I just said, you've got to have some ability for the umpires to say, well, if we're going to have an umpire decision be the final out in a game, well, then that gets reviewed immediately, regardless of, you know, where it happens, and then the decision is made whether or not that was correct. Because that was just god awful, and I'm not saying the Giants were going to come back. I'm absolutely not. I mean, I don't think the Dodgers look like they knew what they were doing, and I think that they would have probably won that game. But you'll never know, because the last swing was a horribly blown call, and this is why. And people wonder why people are not watching baseball. You got cheaters still playing the game, and you got umpires screwing up and costing teams wins. Or potential wins, I should say it like that. You're not the biggest baseball fan anymore, are you, Brett?
If the Twins are good, I think what most baseball fans are, if their team is good, they'll watch it, which baseball is a very regionally driven sport right now. Or if your team's doing well, you're probably going to be doing well with your TV ratings, attendance, but if your team's losing, no one cares. Probably hey, why they want to expand the playoffs.
Stadiums get you championships. Do you remember that? Yeah. You know, yeah, build them a stadium. They get you a championship. Oh, boy, just got you a few billion dollars. There's my salute to Jim Gaffigan right there with him in town. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Minnesota coronavirus update for today. 3,352 new cases, 28 newly reported deaths. The state's death toll is 8,407 since the start of the pandemic. Of the total deaths, 55.9% were residents of long-term care, now below 56%. As of October 13th, the state reported that 3,435,979 people had received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,267,835 people had completed their vaccine series. The state has administered 219,013 third dose booster shots. Through October 14th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 999. That's up from 983 on Thursday. Of those hospitalized, 253 people are in intensive care. 746 were in general hospital care. State officials have confirmed that the hospital capacity in Minnesota is at its lowest now compared with any other point during the pandemic, largely due to staffing shortages, largely due to idiot Republicans out there telling people to not get vaccinated and not wear a mask. That's why. In these conservative counties where there is less than 50% vaccination rates, that's where a lot of these cases are happening, and that's why all our hospital beds are being taken up. And God help you. If you have someone who has a stroke or a heart attack or a car accident or a drug overdose or whatever the case may be and needs to get into an ICU because some guy who was only 2 weeks ago saying, the science is a lie, and gets sick and saying, science needs to save me. The 3,352 positive results on Friday's update were from 47,375 completed tests, creating a test positive rate of 7.0. Hospital capacity strain and COVID numbers. Governor Walz is getting back into action here with new measures designed to support the state's health providers. Actions taken by Walz, effective immediately, can be broken down into three bullet points. Putting the National Guard on alert to provide staffing support at Minnesota's long-term care facilities. Expanding access to COVID-19 emergency staffing pool, which allows long-term care facilities to request short-term emergency temporary staffing, and directing the Department of Human Services to free up capacity at state long-term care facilities. The goal is to free up hospital beds, many of which are currently being used by patients who the governor says should instead be in long-term care facilities. So, what's interesting here is this is also part of As he goes through this, as he read the National Guard to help with the staff shortages, Walz's first-term DFL governor toured the intensive care unit at North Memorial in Robbinsdale before speaking to reporters about alleviating staff shortages. Hospital ICUs are nearly full in part because they are struggling to transfer patients to long-term care facilities which can't find workers. Walz is also expanding access to emergency staffing. When the COVID surges, it displaces space. Walz said, this is a domino effect going down to step-down care and long-term care facilities. There's no ability to step down now because there's no capacity at those facilities. On Friday, well, you know, maybe instead of activating the National Guard, maybe the facility should just charge people or pay people a livable wage and then and keep them safe, and then maybe they'll get the staff. I'm just going to say it. The governor has fewer tools available to him to respond to the pandemic. The peacetime emergency he had declared on March 2020 ended on July 2021 after lawmakers voted to end it. He recently asked Senate Republicans to approve new laws to help him deal with the pandemic, adding to a potential special session agenda, which had originally included pandemic bonus pay for essential workers. But Senate Republicans are pushing a different approach. This week, they held a hearing critical of Walz's vaccine mandate for state government workers and supporting workers who are defying the mandate. I'll get back to that in just a second. Also, Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller, a Republican of Winona, sent the governor a letter noting his caucus's opposition to the governor's health mandates. The governor, you better start putting him in because it's your clown car districts that are basically overwhelming the state's medical system. You know, when you guys came on out there and say, personal responsibility. Remember when you guys did that? And you said it should be personal. You guys suck at being responsible. Your districts suck at it. They're not being personally responsible. They're basically being Typhoid Mary out in rural Minnesota. And you guys don't want to seem to address this, as you and your party basically were out there downplaying the importance of vaccines, downplaying the importance of masks. This entire surge has been created by Republican stupidity. Absolutely. And now all of a sudden, though, but don't you try to fix it. Oh, God, what a bunch of clowns. I mean, they are literally killing their own constituents and acting like they want to die anyway. That's what they're acting like. Only the governor can call the legislative back to St. Paul before calling them back. Walls says once assurances are sent, will not remove Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm, which would be a bad idea because we're in a pandemic, you morons. Senate Republicans have refused. Miller says that the precondition is delaying the start of the special session at this time, and the only obstacle addressing today's needs. Now, Miller's new at this, okay? He's new at this. Let's give him a little bit of a break. But he's new at this. See if you can follow along here. At this time, the only obstacle in addressing today's needs is your unwillingness to put frontline workers and farmers ahead of the job security of your cabinet, Miller wrote. No, Walls is more than willing to take care of that. It's you guys and your insane insistence that Jan Malcolm has to be executed, Kurt Dout's word, not mine, that you need to execute Jan Malcolm from the Department of Health, that is your biggest priority during a pandemic. Because you're morons, okay? You are. You're just bought and paid for. Your price tag still on your neck. You are morons. Walls grew irate in the letter and in the timing. He also objected to another demand Miller voiced in his letter, reforming the state's emergency power laws. Okay, Miller, I get that you're new at this, but you can't on one side say it's Governor Walz's demands to keep the health commissioner that's holding everything up, and then say, oh, and by the way, we demand that emergency power rules are complete unless a Republican is in charge, that they're not going to be ever good again. Dude, this is on you then. This is all on you. But, you know, and you know what? This is the power of brainwashing. The power of brainwashing. They are basically killing their own constituents out in rural Minnesota. And yet those clowns will all say, I'm voting Republican again. Why can't I get into an ICU bed? They're all full. Mary Frances was right about masks. That's what your clown card brigade is. That's what your clown card brigade is. You can't demand. Oh, it's his demands that are holding things up. Oh, by the way, here's our demands as well. Oh, okay. I see. Because you're an idiot. And also, you do understand you don't control the House of Representatives. Although, where is the House? I'll get back to that here in a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Going on here, Walls, we're in a health crisis. They could act upon it, referring to the Republicans, which they're refusing. Walls criticized Republicans for holding two hearings on his state worker vaccine mandate, saying they invited people to testify who are downplaying the pandemic or spreading anti-vaccine fervor, which they are. And I'll get to that in a second. He said Senate Republicans want a ban on so-called vaccine passports and mandates for the public. None of these things are real. They want to basically prevent a private business from being able to, that's kind of what I've understood, is that they want to kind of actually do like they've done in Texas and say private businesses cannot regulate, you know, their own employees. That's, and once again, this is for a minority of people. The vast majority of people in the state are getting vaccinated. And I also want to make sure we remember, we talked about the state worker, the mandate that he put on state workers. Republicans had their second hearing on this. 73% of state workers have been vaccinated. 25% have said that they are willing to take weekly tests, which means only 2% of state workers want to have the ability to go sick into the office, sicken everyone in the office, and then have no culpability or responsibility for their reckless behavior afterwards. That's really what's going on. The Republicans have taken the side of the very small minority, the 2%, who basically don't feel if this is real, so they want the ability to take and be possibly be sick, go into the office, sicken everyone in the office, and then have no... And you can't get mad at me. You should have had a law in place. That's kind of what they want. They, on Thursday, argued the state should tweak the vaccine mandate policies to account for unvaccinated individuals who have natural immunity from previous infections. That's not necessarily true. That's not necessarily true. Am I hearing something else?
Were you hearing something else? I was just muttering to myself that doesn't make any sense. The science doesn't even back that up, what they're saying.
Unvaccinated individuals have a natural immunity from previous infection. That's from what I've read. I've done my own research with the American Medical Association, the Journal of American Medicine, the Mayo Clinic, Health Partners, all those people. They all basically have said the same thing, that you can, even if you've had it, you can get it again. So you don't have a natural immunity.
I thought I read, too, like it's not very long lasting at all, too.
Exactly. No, it's not. It's like 3 months at best.
Right, yeah.
They say the policy should have been struck through collective bargaining. Oh, fine. Wow, really? Collective bargaining. Oh, so now it's you're pro-union, you're saying. Oh, okay. That's new for the Republicans. During the Senate hearing, Abler of Anoka and Kiffmeyer, Big Lake, criticized Walz's implementation of vaccine mandate that requires state workers who work on site to be vaccinated or submit to weekly testing. In the second hearing on the topic, Republicans continued to say Walz's administration is the ongoing pandemic is wrong. I'm just amazed at the very simple obviousness for testing and antibodies meets such great resistance and seems to be ignoring the science. Well, no, Mary, no, that you can get tested. You can vow, you can say, I'm not going to get vaccinated, but agree to get tested and you go into the office. Do you understand what you're criticizing? I don't think Mary Kiffmeyer knows what she's criticizing. She cites studies from the Cleveland Clinic and Israel. Kiffmeyer argued that people with natural immunity should not be subjected to vaccine or testing mandate, and that the state should test them for antibodies. Cleveland Clinic, by the way, however, clarified in August that despite the research, it urges people to get vaccinated and acknowledge the limitations of its study. So, Mary, I don't think you've done your own research, Mare. I don't think you've done your own research. More research is needed, the clinic wrote in a statement. We do not know how long the immune system will protect itself against reinfection after COVID-19, as our study only looked at individuals over a five-month period, or how well protected previously infected individuals are against variants. It's also important to keep in mind the study was conducted in a population that was younger and healthier than the general population. The Israel study, by the way, has not been peer-reviewed. But those are Mary. Mary's got – these are telling the truth. Now, ignore the corrections from the Cleveland Clinic. Just go with their initial statement because that's the only thing that matters. And don't ever say Bidote again. That's Mary Kiffmeyer. What a sweetheart. What an a sweet – just a delight, isn't she? Ugh. You know, she reminds me – you know what she reminds me of? She reminds me of that parent that goes around on Halloween and steals people's Halloween decorations because you're worshiping Satan. But meanwhile, in her own basement, she's got like a full Halloween display, you know, real kinky. You know what I'm talking about. That's what she just – she reminds me of that. I'm not saying she is. I'm just saying that's kind of what kind of Mary reminds me of. Ignore the jack-o'-lanterns in my own house. Just saying that's what she reminds me. I'm not saying that's who she is. I'm just saying that's – you know. Once again, Republicans, when it comes to state workers, want the 2% of state workers to be able to go into the office and sicken the other 98% of them without any consequences for their behavior. That is their entire goal. That one would say, well, 73% of people want to get are vaccinated and 25% are willing to weekly test. What the heck's wrong with the other 2%? They've been brainwashed? Oh, that's what it is. But I'm going to catch on a theme here, and this is important. When we come on back, Teresa Meese is going to join us, Mid-Central Podcast, because we have to put these numbers in perspective, that this is not the overwhelming majority of people in rural Minnesota. It's in some places, it's maybe 50-50, but it's not overwhelming. But the problem is that the way this stuff is covered, the small percentage, and the way that the Republicans promote it, the small minority is presented as the majority opinion, and that's not true. And that's going to come back. This is the reason why I'll explain that when I do return, when we have Teresa on the air in just a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. The Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. So, as I was mentioning in the last story here, you know, you have to put numbers in perspective here. When the Republicans are demanding that you have to have other options for state workers, they're only talking about a small minority, 2%. And the reality is that they have the option of getting vaccinated or getting tested. They just don't want to do either. Which then, at what point here? What are we talking about here? But needless to say, do we jeopardize the 98% who are willing to try to stay safe for the foolishness of the 2%? No, I don't think you do that. There was another story, and I brought this up yesterday. Aaron Rupar, when he was on with us, we talked about a little bit about a rally that happened. It was a far-right rally that happened up in St. Cloud. And the first thing I looked at the video is like, okay, how many people are here? It's like 250. Well, St. Cloud, 65,000. And the surrounding communities, and then anyone within 30 minutes, there's no one there. But yet that's what kind of gets the attention nowadays. And part of it is kind of the war on the news media. Either the news media today is owned by, you know, kind of right-wing outlets, or the newsrooms have been so gutted that they can barely keep up with news. And so they generally look for the howler monkey exhibit as opposed to trying to go out and find out what real stories are. Which is an injustice, because we don't hear about what's really going on in a lot of places, because we only get the howler monkey exhibits. We only get the bad news that happens. And that's why I wanted to welcome on Teresa Meese. She is with Min Central Currents. It is a podcast that talks about certain elements and certain things going on in central Minnesota. And she's kind enough today to take some time to talk with us about this issue. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, I'm so glad to be here.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. Your point was very valid. It's frustrating. It's got to be very frustrating. Where are you located at right now, by the way? Can I ask?
I am in St. Cloud. I live near Riverside Park and Munsinger Gardens, which are two of the greatest things up here in St. Cloud. So, yeah, I live here. I grew up here. I'm a Ricori graduate. So I'm a local.
Well, and it's got to be frustrating for you when the news that seems to get covered out of St. Cloud is generally stuff that it's kind of pandering to an extremist message at times. That's look this group of far right people showing up that are here at this hotel that are having a rally. And the reality is it's a small percentage. I think that most people in the state don't get to see what's going on the ground in a lot of these communities, and that's not represented by what we see presented to us, especially in the news media.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we made the New York Times for a coffee clutch that happens at a Culver's, and those are definitely not representative of the whole community, but it made the national news. And, you know, we've had some great over the years, as I've lived here, I've watched things progress and change. And there's been a lot of people doing the diligent work to make sure that there's inclusion, there's welcoming in the community. I've been to the Pride marches up here. There was a great number of people that turned out for our own little memorial at the time that George Floyd, the marches were going on in the Twin Cities as well. And so there are people who care, who are aware. There's business owners who work every single day to make sure that people feel welcome in their places of business. So we only get, you know, news for the, you know, people who have very offensive material inside their places of business. And I will not name them because I'm sure we all know. But, you know, those are the people that get the press. Where all these other people who are living their lives, being good members of the community and being very welcoming, that doesn't get the attention.
Well, and it also goes on. One of the things that completely gets ironed over is that there are conservatives out there that might not agree with you politically on things, but don't want everything to be politics. That they still want to talk about, you know, farming issues, St. Claude State hockey. They want to talk about these things. There's a variety of things they can talk about. But once again, they themselves kind of get minimalized because, once again, howler monkey exhibits get the cameras, and that drives that narrative.
It really does. And, you know, they're, like you said, they're, a lot of the folks up here are just living their lives, and you can pause and have good conversations. When we, like, one of the points of the podcast was to leave the politics aside and just discuss policy and how it impacts people's lives as individual human beings. We don't ask any of our community members what their political affiliation is before we'll interview them. They're telling their story, and that's important, is to hear the stories of the humans that live here, you know?
No, it absolutely is. And I think that the problem is that whereas you have great outlets like you who are out there trying, the problem is that we're in this kind of zone where the vast majority of news that is delivered really through a fairly fine filter. And so unless people come out and look for yours, like, and once again, it's Men Central Currents is the podcast. MenCentralCurrents.org is where you'll find it. And you can find those podcasts there. But, you know, people have to search this out. And I think that sometimes it gets lost with the overwhelming amount of news, which is, once again, agenda driven.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Your podcast here, let's talk, if you don't mind, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you guys have been covering up there, because I think, these are important issues. Broadband is one that you guys did an episode on this not that long ago, on border-to-border internet. I have always been amazed that there is not more unity on this issue, because there isn't a single person, Democrat, Republican, old, young, that doesn't have an immediate need in rural Minnesota on multiple levels for, you know, accessible internet access, broadband access immediately across the entire state.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the person I interviewed did say that there was a great deal of unity in the legislature about it, but I think that people need to understand that regardless of how you're voting, you can still, after you vote, call your legislator and tell them that you want them to put this as a priority. So whatever they campaigned on, it's you in that moment as a citizen who can call them and say, listen, broadband's important to me. I don't care if there's an R, D, or I behind your name. This is something our community needs to thrive. And, you know, the partisanship can just kind of mellow out a bit.
Well, and that's the problem, is that we're living in a world where the demand is that working with the other side is verboten. And, mm-hmm. and even we saw that with the last legislative session, people being critical of anyone that, you know, compromised and worked with the Democrats to push forward bills on the Republican side. And I bring up the Republicans because obviously in Men Central, you're dealing with more Republicans up there than you're dealing with Democrats per se, as regard to elected mm-hmm. officials. But the reality is, and I mean, I've had it. I know exactly what you're talking about. I have sat down with Republican politicians who will tell you a very passionate plea that they have for broadband, that, yes, this is it. I can see it. We need it in the hospitals. We need it in the schools. We need it for business growth. We need it just for, you know, creature comforts at home. We need it across the board. And yet when they get there, it kind of, the ball gets dropped. I think that if enough people called and followed through on that and contacted them when they're not delivering it, something might happen. But the reality is, it is infuriating to have people who will intelligently tell you, oh yeah, we need it, and then not follow through on it.
Absolutely. No. Yeah. That is very frustrating.
you talked about one of the other things you brought up is soil health. And I think I'm just FYI, I'm a big fan of agricultural radio. I always saw the value of it. And I know that the minute they started putting computers in combines, that was kind of things were going to start going downhill for radio broadcasting and for agricultural needs. But I think that there's an important element there, because it is such the foundation. I mean, Americans' economic foundation is agriculture. And yes. And if we do not pay more attention to it, and we don't just go willy-nilly throwing tariffs around on our products, which we need to make sure we get into what is now a global market, you know, we need mm-hmm. to focus on this. You talked about soil health. I've actually heard some other stories about this. Talk a little bit about the podcast you did on that.
Well, Well, you know, it's one of those topics where I grew up out in the country, but I did not grow up on a farm. And so the soil health topic, we wanted to make sure that it did not make people's brains freeze when they hear about soil health. So these things have to be approached in a way that they're accessible to folks. So if you go back and listen to the episode, I mean, it's talking about making sure that people know what sort of measures can be taken and what sort of help can come from the community to encourage that these measures get taken so that we have healthier soils, and educating other farmers, because there's a large number of farmers that are very dedicated to ensuring that we have good soil health for the long term. There's crop rotation, different planting methods and all that goes into it that gets more into detail in the episode. But this sort of educational stuff gets out there, and you can, you know, if you hear it, you can talk to your uncle who's a farmer and say, hey, have you heard about these new techniques? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that sort of information is important to get out. And I'm hoping it's entertaining too. Mm-hmm.
I think about it. We've been talking on my show over the last few weeks about chronic wasting disease, the disease that's affecting the deer. And you're exactly right. There's a lot of people who, I don't hunt. And, you know, this sounds like it's a real minimal problem. What's the big deal? The reality is we could end up crippling our entire deer population in the state, which would have substantial impacts across the board. And you know, so you have to find a way, because, like I said, it might not be the sexiest topic, but soil health is incredibly important when you have a state where once you get outside of the Twin Cities metro area, the vast majority of the economy is based on what you can grow out of the ground.
Well, and there's so many things that intersect with each other, too. So our environmental behaviors in our own homes in town all roll downstream literally and affect mm-hmm. other areas of the world. The farmers up in Minnesota are affecting the shrimp boats in Louisiana.
Yeah.
So it all connects to each other. It's just a giant web. And so that's the other thing that we're trying to do, is educate people about how these different topics touch on each other: the economy, environment, workers' rights, health, all of that.
I want to bring up as well your I think it's your last episode that you did, and about conversations. Because yes. And I give you kudos, because once again you're not trying to be political. You're just trying to talk about the issues, leave politics out of it, and just convey the information that, you know, this is not about, you know, making sure this person wins or this person wins. This is about making sure you know about soil health, broadband issues. But
yes.
you bring up the problem that you have is that there's a lot of people that, as we get into the holiday season, you sit down with family and friends. And everyone, one of the reasons why people don't even show up sometimes at the holidays is because that certain cousin's going to be there, that certain uncle's going to be there. I mean, I always, for me, it's the Packer fan. You know, I'll convey it on that level. I'll leave politics out of it. The Packer fan, the family member who's a Packer fan that you sit down with in the entire time you're there, isn't Aaron Rodgers the best player? Did you see last week's game? Did you see what happened in the second quarter? You're like, can you just pass the gravy and can we talk about something else? Conversations, you broached the subject. Talk a little bit about that episode and what you guys discussed.
Well, we were fortunate enough to have a webinar that was put on by the losing the name, but it was the Minnesota Speech and Theater Group. So check the site, because it'll tell you the exact people who did it. They let us use their webinar content, and they went through and discussed why it's important to have these conversations and how to approach it as a good listener and how to calm yourself and set aside your immediate reactions, and to help the other person feel seen and heard, because validating the other person as a person is something, and it's really horrible to think that we do that to our own family members, that we don't make them feel seen and heard as human beings when they're our family. But that's some of the stuff that's been going on. And so taking the time to let them know that you understand what they're saying, even if you don't agree with where they're coming from, but that you're hearing their words, and then letting them know what your perspective on something is. The conversations are hard. It doesn't mean that you have to give them, you don't have to give space to harmful behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to understand that. But when you're trying to help somebody understand why their behavior and why the way that they're voting is harmful to other people, you need to take the time to have this conversation. Otherwise, you'll never bring them around to hear your point of view.
Well, so exactly. I've talked about this on the show before about the Iowa farmer, pork producer down in Iowa, who mm-hmm. looked at me straight to my face and he said, "I love Trump." And I said, "Well, haven't you guys been hurt by the pork tariffs over in China?" I go, "Oh, yeah, that's killed us. We're having the worst year we've had in 20 years." And I'm like, "Really? And you still love the guy?" I said, "Well, I'm hoping at the end of the day we'll have a lot of success." Well, it never materialized. And I just, you know, at least I understood, you know, that it was the important thing for him wasn't the pork, wasn't his own business really. It was just his political thing. And if you understand that at least – well, then, okay, yeah. I don't think there's really anything else we need to discuss. How about those Packers? You know, it's like it's right. you can go into something else, and at least you understand the parameters of the game you're playing.
Absolutely. You stated it perfectly there.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, it's – I think we've learned that you cannot ignore problems anymore. You just nope. can't. The idea of just, well, ignoring it and we'll go away – that just does not exist. I commend you. I mean, like I said, just trying to go out there and say, I want to do this neutrally, it's got to be very difficult because no matter what, from both sides, I imagine, no matter what the issue is, you're always going to have people saying, but you should have said this. I commend you on trying to do this because this is, I think we need to have more voices like this.
Well, thank you. I mean, I clearly do have my opinions and my feelings of my own, but we're just trying to, like I said, be education-based and education should be just based in reality. And so that's where we're aiming for there. Do you mind if I throw out one small invite to people from outside of the St. Cloud area? I have always said that I would love to have people from the Twin Cities escape the gravitational pull of Minneapolis-St. Paul and try making it up 94. Come visit us in St. Cloud. See our shops. There's actually an art crawl in downtown St. Cloud today from 4 to 8. We have a vibrant arts community. We have amazing restaurants. The people are great up here. We would love to have your company up here and come up and give us a try.
It's important, and reality is that it's right down the road. I mean, we were just up there last weekend. My daughter went to visit St. Ben's, so we stopped into St. Cloud.
Oh, wonderful.
It's cute. St. Cloud is absolutely cute. If you haven't been up there, St. Cloud is delightful. And I imagine St. Cloud, the city of St. Cloud has on their website tourism stuff that people, if they want to come and visit, right?
Oh, definitely. Yep. Visit Greater St. Cloud or something.
All right.
I'm not very good with the website addresses today. I apologize for that to your listeners.
Tell you what, you post that up on your social media, and I'll make sure I link to that a little bit later on. I'll also link to mincentralcurrents.org, mincentralcurrents.org. That's where you can hear the podcast. Teresa, I, you know, like I said, all my best on this. I think it's a great project. Come on back. Let's talk when you've got other shows coming up. I'd love to hear more about them when they do come up, okay?
Wonderful. I've had a great conversation. Thank you so much, Matt.
Teresa Meese, kind enough to join us once again. It's mincentralpodcast.org, mincentralpodcast.org. Midcentralcurrents.org. I'll get it right. Midcentralcurrents.org, midcentralcurrents.org. I'll link to everything on the social media later on, and we'll spotlight this interview with Teresa. We'll take a break. Come on back. Wrap up the first hour. When we do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. No, what you've got going on right now in this country, and I'll be blunt about it. You've got Republicans who are focusing on a micro section of the country. Like I said, when they're out there saying the 2% need the right to sicken the 98%, what are they saying? I mean, it used to be that you'd have at least some common sense in that thought process, and it's just not there. And as their constituents are the ones in rural Minnesota who are dying, who are having the hardest problem during this current wave, they're the ones who are like, unless we can get our way first, we are not going to do anything to help our own people. And that's just who they are. I mean, there's a belligerence there that basically is, you know, a focus on the micro niche. On the left, what I've noticed is a reluctance to fight. Or that it's, and I've said this for almost 12 years I've been on this radio station, the amount of people here that will, when it comes down to a progressive fight, as opposed to go across the aisle and stand up to the bully on the other side of the aisle, they'll just whip to the guy to the left who agrees with them on 95% of the things and saying, you don't agree with me completely. And you're like, sheesh. And so you've got to find the mid-ground here. And the mid-ground is there are some real things that need to be done. And, it takes a community and a bunch in a specific district, people in a specific district, voting out politicians who are not doing what they want to do. But this is truly the problem that we have, especially in rural Minnesota. Republicans have brainwashed people into, as we talked about the other day, entertaining the idea of another civil war as opposed to vote for a Democrat. And that is insanity. That is insanity in its purest definition. But that's what's gone on, is that the Republicans out in rural Minnesota are not afraid of losing because they have basically brainwashed so many of their constituents into saying, well, they haven't done a damn thing for me. And Democrats have done a lot of things for me. But if I vote for a Democrat, I'm wrong. So I'm just going to vote for the Republican again. And this is why I have been said, I think this state would do a hell of a lot better if next election cycle, every DFLer that was running across the board was first a DFLer, heaven forbid, and would get out there and challenge these Republicans on these issues. Because these issues, healthcare for all, broadband for all, these are issues that are resonating with most of the voters. And yet, we're not getting victories because, frankly, we're not really trying too hard in rural Minnesota. And that is the real crime. Hour two is up next. By the way, do you know a story that just came up? I saw The Atlantic came today. I saw this story. I haven't read it yet, but why you need like Mid-Central Currents, why you need podcasts like that. Check this out. The Atlantic, McKay Coppins writes, the Pioneer Press owner, Alden Global Capital, what threatens local newspapers now is not just digital disruption or abstract marketing forces. They're being targeted by investors who have figured out how to get rich by strip mining local news outfits. The model is simple. Gut the staff, sell the real estate, jack up the subscription prices, wring as much cash as possible out of the enterprise until eventually enough readers cancel their subscriptions and the paper folds or is reduced to a desiccated husk of its former self. St. Paul Pioneer Press. The men then who devised the model are Randall Smith and Heath Freeman, the co-founders of Alden Capital Group, or Alden Global Capital, rather. Since they first bought their first newspaper a decade ago, no one has been more mercenary or less interested in pretending to care about their publication's long-term health. Researchers at the University of North Carolina found that Alden-owned newspapers have cut their staff at twice the rate of their competitors. Not coincidentally, circulation has fallen faster, too. And so you got the main newspapers in any given state are being gutted on a lot of different levels. On the other side of it, in small towns, my God, you've gone out to the small towns. Every news outlet out there is this far right wing, it's basically taking Republican talking points and printing them as fact. And, no matter what the newspaper groups that own these small town papers, I mean, that's what you get. So you do not get news like it used to be. Gosh, have you ever seen an old newspaper? I mean, I'm talking like 1950s. Brett, when was the last time you saw an old newspaper?
Oh, that old? Yeah, not quite that far back. No, not a 1950s old school local paper.
They reprinted a paper at the Minnesota Historical Society, just the front section. It was like 29 pages or 28 pages or something like that. And it was magnificent. I mean, it was really in-depth news across everything, and they just reprinted it because there was some important historical note. I'll never forget going out to my grandmother-in-law's garage, and she had local papers from like I think it was the 70s. And the local paper in the 70s had columnists and they had beats, and I mean this is for like Princeton, Wisconsin. And I mean, it was actually a newspaper that, they had state reporters, they had national news. I mean, it was great. And now if you have a community newspaper, it's either all just AP stuff and opinion stuff that's far right, or it's gone in the most part.
I even remember from my own streaming thing, we partnered with a couple local papers who, even as far back as 10 years ago, yeah, they actually did have their own local reporters, local columnists at some of these, and they don't exist anymore, and I'm guessing they were probably brought up by that company, Alden Capital.
Oh, well, I don't know if it's Alden or not, but I mean, a lot of these companies, they just don't exist.
I know the local one, I think it's the Eden Prairie News that went out a few years ago, yeah, because they were bought by Alden, and they shut it down.
I will say that this is why the Republicans have desperately tried to install a cable television standard of internet access. That is their ultimate goal, because they want to be able to limit what people in this country can see online. Because basically, I mean, they've gotten it to the point out in rural America where in many communities, the only news that's not filtered through a right-wing prism is the classical music station at the top of the hour's news segment. And that's why they went after NPR as hard as they did, not NPR and National Public Radio. But the internet is something that they can't control it. So what they try to do is they basically just say, well, these are the only websites you want to go to. But you get the ones that are out there that are just trying to do basic news, like Men's Central Current, and they kind of you want to see them succeed, and that's kind of one of those things which we need to have more of those, especially. That's the future, I think, of news reporting in rural America. I think it's going to be local podcasts and local websites, and that's what it's going to be.
No wonder that maybe we're in the current political situation when you go to rural America and there's no local news. All you're getting is what you're getting on syndicated talk radio or whatever else you have up there. That's all, as you said, filtered through a right-wing prism.
I will post the link to the Atlantic story if it's up. I'll find that. A Canadian woman, what's the luckiest you've ever been?
That's a loaded question.
I got a story about a Canadian woman, but I want to ask you how lucky have you ever been? It's not going to be a Canadian girlfriend story, Brett.
Luckiest I've ever been, actually, I think it was my senior year of high school. I actually won some money in a slot machine at Mystic Lake.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you immediately then put that money back into a slot machine?
Oh, probably.
Oh,
yeah.
For God's sake.
Wasn't that lucky,
exactly.
I guess. Yeah.
You're still not as lucky as this Canadian woman. Canadian woman survived an extremely close call when a meteorite came crashing through her ceiling, landed in her bed. Hello.
Wait, a meteorite?
Someone go for Superman? Hello there. Ruth Hamilton told the Canadian press she'd been asleep for hours on the night of October 3rd when she woke up to the song of her dog barking. Moments later, the Golden, British Columbia resident, Golden is the not the dog, is the town, Golden, British Columbia resident, said she heard what sounded like an explosion and felt debris all over her face. Hamilton says she jumped out of bed and turned the lights on, only to discover a hole in her bedroom ceiling. The 66-year-old told CBC News she quickly called 911 while talking the operator. She pulled back one of the pillows she'd been sleeping in and spotted a charcoal-colored chunk of rock. It had just landed inches from where her head had been. Wouldn't that thing be like lava hot, burning anything touching? And it was just there in the bed with you? Martian Manhunter, no! Sorry. I think I'm just in wonder every time I go to the bedroom. I say, "Oh my goodness, I could have been hit. That could have hit me. It could have." Police officer was sent to investigate. They initially thought the rock could have been debris from a nearby construction site, but workers were confirmed that they hadn't been doing any blasting, but not did account seeing an explosion in the sky. That's when Hamilton and other officer knew it was a meteorite. That's some good police work right there. It's like,
I want to see that police report. It's a cause of accident, meteorite.
It's a Canadian cop, so he probably has a minor in astronomy. I'm not just a cop. I'm an architect on the side, too. According to the CBC, Hamilton reported the finding to experts at Western University, who confirmed the crash into her bedroom was certainly a meteorite. It's 2.8 pounds. Damn, that would have hurt like hell. If it did not have the roof to break its fall, would that have done like, when volcanoes blow up, right? They'll have people like running for their lives, which is a good call, because chunks of molten rock are falling from the sky, and if it hits you, you're done. And you are literally done. I got to imagine this thing would have pierced you, but good.
I mean, it's like if someone throws a baseball at you over 100 miles an hour and hits you in the head, that's going to do some damage. So I imagine the meteor's going a lot faster than that, so...
It's going to be a little hot. You want to get some hot pads.
Yeah, then you have the heat, too. Yeah, yeah.
It's been on fire in the atmosphere coming down. Shatner? No, it's it is a little concerning. We generally don't have the meteorites hit people's houses, though. I mean, that's just some bad luck. Let's just call it what it is. That's just some bad luck. But, oh, Canada. Someone's getting a nighttime visitor.
This just sounds like how every sci-fi movie starts, where she touches the meteorite, she becomes an alien, then we all just go to doom as she turns everyone else into aliens.
Okay, let me put a positive spin on it. Or every sci-fi porn film begins, you know, it's like, what's crashing through my ceiling into my bed with me? Oh, no. cue the guitar as we get – well, we'll just leave that. It's Canada. It's the most polite porn you've ever seen in your life. Oh, yeah, there. Sorry about that. 952-946-6205. Oh, more Canadian porn talk later on. But right now, you've actually got one of your Friday interviews we're going to talk about.
I do. We have Kyle Kondik of Sabatow's Crystal Ball talking about some 2022 polling, as well as why Minnesota's remained a blue state, and, of course, Trump encouraging his voters to stay home.
That's a gutsy call. Don't vote.
Bold strategy. Yeah.
Good luck with that. It is, of course, Brett Johnson right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson back with you here on a Friday afternoon. We're joined now by Kyle Kondik, as we're going to be talking about polling nationally and also a little bit in Minnesota and in Virginia. Kyle Kondik is the managing editor for Sabatow's Crystal Ball. You can find more information about that over at centerforpolitics.org. Again, centerforpolitics.org, as we'll be talking through some polling data and what it could mean for 2022. Kyle, thanks so much for joining me on the show today. Appreciate it.
No problem.
So, first question I have for you right now, because as I try to forecast what could happen in 2022, as I'm sure a lot of people are kind of following along, what should we be really looking at? Is the presidential approval rating kind of our best indicator, or should we be taking a look at that congressional generic ballot as well?
I think Biden's approval rating is probably a better measure. One thing about the generic ballot is that it often has had something of a Democratic bias over the years, to the point where if the Republicans actually end up winning the National House popular vote and you win the House or whatever, you know, sometimes that doesn't become obvious until later in the cycle. You know, one thing I think is maybe telling right now is that, you know, there aren't as many House generic national polls, which basically ask people some variation of the question, you know, you're going to vote for a Democrat or a Republican in your local House race. There's that poll, and then there's the national, you know, do you approve of Joe Biden's job performance or do you disapprove? You know, Biden's approval right now is about 45%. The Democratic number in the generic ballot is about 44, so those are kind of tied at the hip. Biden disapproval is like 49-50%. Republicans are only at about 41-42 in the generic ballot. You know, if Biden's approval stays negative, you'd probably expect that the Republican share of the generic ballot would probably go up. Democrats might stagnate. So, you know, I think the best thing, if you're a Democrat, you know, looking at this, you know, you want Biden's approval rating to be net positive, because that is, you know, that if it's negative, you know, usually voters are looking for change, looking for balance in the midterm elections. And if Biden is unpopular, they're probably more open to that kind of message.
So as I think we know right now, Biden's approval rating is obviously underwater. But at least looking back at the history of midterm elections, do we have examples where we can point to a presidential approval rating improving from this point in time between, well, I guess about 1 year out from the midterm election? Do we have any history of a president's approval rating actually improving in that amount of time?
Often what happens is the president will get a little bit more popular closer to the actual election day, to sort of the electorate engages. You know, Donald Trump's approval was certainly not good basically throughout his whole presidency, but it was worse exactly 4 years ago now, or, you know, today, than it was at the time of the 2018 midterm. It was still is still net negative, but it was particularly poor in 2017, and then it got a little bit better at various points of his presidency. Trump's approval also went up as the 2020 election got closer, and you know, got to the point where it did perfectly mimic how national popular vote was relatively close. You saw that with Obama too, at least in 2012. You know, I would say that you know, two times that in basically the last since the New Deal, basically the two times that the president's party has actually netted House seats, every other time in the midterm the president's party has at least lost some number of House seats, sometimes a little, sometimes a lot. You know, you had 1998 when Bill Clinton and the Democrats netted a handful of seats, and George W. Bush and the Republicans in 2002 when they netted a handful of seats. And in both those instances, you know, Bush's approval, you know, obviously skyrocketed after 9/11, and it was very high in the midterm, not as high as it was after 9/11, but was still very strong. And Bill Clinton's approval was in 60s during the 1998 midterm. That had a lot to do with the fact it was the time of peace and prosperity. The economy was good, but also I think there was a feeling that Republicans had kind of overplayed their hand a little bit on the impeachment question and didn't really handle the campaign as well as maybe they could have. You know, that was when that all was going on, and Clinton, of course, eventually was impeached. There was a trial, he was acquitted, et cetera. But that whole thing was going on at the time of the 98 midterm. But what that suggests, I think, is that, you know, if you're the president's party, you may need a little bit of a kind of extraordinary circumstance in order to avoid the usual seat loss. And because the Republicans only need to net 5 seats to win the House back, even if the environment is good for Democrats next year, they still could lose the House in that kind of environment. Again, given just the history that the president's party often struggles in the midterm. But, I'd keep an eye more on the Biden approval number because the generic, the generic is not particularly reliable this far out from the election.
Yeah, I was trying to reconcile that because as I look at Biden's approval rating and compare that to the generic ballot right now, the generic ballot has been pretty consistent showing Democrats from anywhere having about a 2-4 percentage point lead while Biden's approval rating remains underwater. Did we see a similar trend as this, maybe even going back to Barack Obama in 2009 or 2010? Or what kind of causes this discrepancy between the generic ballot and the approval rating of the president?
Again, for whatever reason, it seems like Democrats often lead the generic ballot a lot of the time, particularly far out from the election. And, you know, sometimes they'll lead it, you know, but before the election too, which sometimes indicates a good election. Although the generic did overstate Democrats in the House by, you know, a significant, you know, 3, 4, 5 points in 2020. The generic ballot made it seem like the electoral environment was a lot like 2018 and 2020. Well, it was a more politically balanced environment than that. Democrats ended up losing seats in the House instead of gaining them. It's also possible that there are some folks who disapprove of Biden's job performance, but still plan to vote Democratic for House. And that's something that, you know, Democrats, that they're going to need, particularly if Biden's approval is not good next year.
Now, earlier this week, we had former President Donald Trump threatening fellow Republicans, saying that his voters would stay home if the GOP is not on board with his efforts to relitigate and try to overturn the 2020 election. Now, I'm curious, how big of a threat could that actually be? Because as we look back to those twin Georgia Senate races earlier this year, do we have any evidence maybe of Republicans staying home in that election? Or how serious of a threat could this be for Republicans' efforts in 2022 from Trump's threats?
Yeah, turnout overall was really strong in the Georgia Senate runoffs. It was relatively close to the presidential number, which is really huge turnout for a non-presidential election. But the turnout in base Republican areas dipped a little bit more than the turnout in base Democratic areas, and that allowed Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff to both get elected to the U.S. Senate earlier this year. And of course, that's made the Democratic Senate majority, which is, 50-50 with just the Vice President Kamala Harris, breaking ties. So you do have some evidence there potentially, or some suggestion that Trump may have alienated a small but significant segment of his own voters. You know, from a midterm standpoint, you're not going to see a presidential level turnout. And, it's a question of, you know, which kinds of presidential voters don't show up, how big the overall turnout actually is. You know, 2018 and 2020 were both historically high turnouts for both a midterm and for a presidential. But, you know, the midterm turnout was about 50% or so of people eligible to vote. Presidential turnout was more like two-thirds, you know, 60, I think it was exact, it was like 66.7. You know, so that's still about a 16, 17-point gap between the presidential and the midterm. You know, if turnout's like 45% or something next year, that still would be a pretty good number. You know, you have certain states that have higher turnout than others. I mean, Minnesota is known, for instance, as a very high turnout state, but there's always going to be some drop off in the presidential, the midterm. Oftentimes the president's party suffers more of a drop off than the non-White House party, which helps explain a little bit of the advantage that being out of the White House, you know, sometimes shows in the midterm election.
Well, one of the big races coming up this year in just a few weeks that a lot of people are going to be watching nationally is, of course, that governor's race in Virginia, where we have the Democrat Terry McAuliffe taking on the Republican Glenn Youngkin. And right now it seems McAuliffe has consistently had anywhere from about a 2 to 4 percentage point lead without that polling really moving very much since earlier this summer. Is that kind of unusual from what we've seen recently, or is that pretty consistent from what we've seen in, I guess, these very polarized times where it's very tough to get polling to really move?
Yeah, it's not that surprising. I mean, these races can often be stable, and in fact, sometimes if you see big movement, it maybe can be something of a mirage. And yeah, I mean, I think you're describing the polling generally pretty accurately. I mean, it's a small but consistent lead for McAuliffe. You know, Virginia has become a more of a Democratic state in recent years. It's not, you know, it's not California. You know, it's not New York. It's not Illinois, but it's, you know, it's not like Virginia used to be. Virginia was definitely more of a Republican state, you know, 20 years ago. And, you know, 10 years ago, I think it was a purple state. Now I think it's more of a blue state, but not so blue, in my opinion, that a Republican couldn't win this governor's race. You know, Glenn Youngkin, the Republican candidate, I think is, you know, been able to hang with McAuliffe, if the polls are to be believed. So, and that's another one where, you know, the turnout mix is going to be pretty important. And, you know, one thing, sometimes you see this in polls, that there's a, you know, there's sort of three groups of people that you'll see polled. The first is all adults. So, you know, that means all adults across the country are supposed to be represented or in a given place. And then a smaller group of people, you know, a smaller subset of adults is registered voters. And look, not every registered voter votes in an election. So there are registered voters who won't show up to vote. And then the smallest group is likely voters. And that's who pollsters try to drill down on as we get closer to an election. And what you see in Virginia with a lot of these polls is that McAuliffe does much better with the bigger group of registered voters than the smaller group of likely voters who sort of make it through the screen as to how pollsters determine someone is, you know, likely or not to vote. And so that shows that, you know, I think the Republicans do have an enthusiasm and turnout advantage in this race, but the polling has not yet consistently shown that that's enough for them to get over and lead McAuliffe, but it's close enough that, and, you know, polls are, you know, we shouldn't expect them to be perfect. So I think it's indicative of a competitive race.
I want to go back to something you just mentioned, and that had to do with registered voters versus likely voters. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and I very well could be on this, but didn't that actually used to be in the inverse, where it was typically Republicans who would perform better among registered voters, or excuse me, among likely voters than registered voters?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what we're seeing right now, is that, you know, that there was a poll from Fox News recently out from Virginia that had McAuliffe up by 5 amongst their likely voters, but up 11 amongst registered voters. We've seen that in some of the other polls, which essentially indicates that if the turnout is bigger, you'd expect that to benefit McAuliffe, because that means that more of that registered voter group, which is a broadly a more pro-democratic group, would be showing up in the actual electorate. But it's pretty common, to your point, for the likely voter screen to screen out more Democrats than Republicans, because Republicans are known as having sort of the more reliable base. Well, I got to say, part of that was because the Republicans did better amongst more reliable voters, particularly, you know, white college-educated voters. Well, that group is, you know, it's still a swing group, but it's become more Democratic in recent years. And so It may be that that the Democrats have a more reliable electorate now than they used to because of certain changes in the electorate, and the Republicans have become pretty dependent on kind of white blue collar voters, and the turnout rates for those folks certainly isn't as good as the white college crowd. So trading a white college educated voter for a white non college educated voter, the white college voter is probably a more reliable voter in midterm. Now, those folks, doesn't mean they don't change their minds from election to election. But that's something to watch too, because the old thought that Democrats had this sort of structural turnout disadvantage in the midterm, it may be less true than it was in the past.
Final question for you about this Virginia governor's race. As you mentioned, Virginia has certainly been trending towards being more of a blue than purple state in recent years. So as we look at this governor's race, should Democrats be hoping not just for a McCullough victory, but maybe a more comfortable victory of 4 or 5 points? Because obviously they'd be happy with a 1 or 2 point victory. But if you compare that to presidential results, probably a 1 or 2 point victory for McCullough, even if he were to win, might spell some bad news for the Dems in 2022. Would you kind of agree with that assessment?
I think from like a Republican perspective, a close loss in Virginia is not a bad moral victory, because it shows that, in a blue state or a bluish state where some trends have been against Republicans, it would show the ability for some bounce back. So I do think it's fair to sort of set the expectations for Democrats a little higher in Virginia that, obviously a win is a win, but in terms of kind of expectation setting for the future, if you're a Democrat, I think you'd like to see something a little bit more comfortable than just a few points, as you're using Virginia as sort of a barometer of the broader political environment.
And final overall question for you, and this has to do with, of course, my home state here in Minnesota. Minnesota has been kind of unusual compared to other states in the Midwest, where it has remained a relatively bluish purple state. Can you talk about why that has kind of remained the case when you compare it to other states like an Iowa or a Michigan or Ohio or others that have tended a little bit more red over the past decade or so?
Yeah, part of it is that Minnesota has a higher four-year college attainment level than many of the other states in the Midwest. And I just mentioned that that college versus non-college dynamic is pretty important. And so while, Ohio just has, just doesn't have as high of a four-year college attainment. And that, I think, helps explain why Ohio has become more of a red state now and Minnesota still leans toward the Democrats. Also, and the two things are related, Minnesota has a kind of a dominant city center, the Twin Cities and its suburbs make up a big chunk of the state vote, and having that kind of blue anchor in the state, has sort of kept it more Democratic, even as Republicans have definitely made gains in some of the outstate areas. It's not, Illinois is a different state clearly than Minnesota is, but part of the reason why Minnesota and Illinois were the only two states in the Midwest, as classically defined, that voted for Clinton in 2016, were because they had those anchor big blue cities and suburban counties, which kept the state with the Democrats, whereas the other states didn't quite have that same dynamic. Illinois certainly has more diversity than Minnesota does. But Minnesota has a higher than average 4-year college attainment, which demographically makes a difference.
We've been speaking with Kyle Kondik. He is the managing editor of Sabato's Crystal Ball. You can find more information about them over at centerforpolitics.org. And, of course, you'll probably see them all over the news, as they've been one of the big national prognosticators when it comes to polling and what could happen in politics. So make sure you give them a follow. Hey, Kyle, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And coming up next, we'll turn things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Matt Brett here. And I'll tell you what, as the billionaires keep launching rockets into space, Joe Biden, he's actually taking care of something we should have taken care of 100 years ago. Well, I think we did, but then they got the auto industry and the gas industry and the rubber industry dismantled it. The Federal Railroad Administration has released a Midwest regional plan to expand intercity passenger rail for the Midwest over the next 40 years. They released a 198-page plan on Wednesday, which would create four pillar routes with Chicago. The largest, of course, would be Chicago to MSP, Minneapolis-St. Paul, core express trains with 24 trips per day. Okay, is that 24, you know, fully between, like, you know, just, you know, 12 from Minneapolis, 12 from Chicago? I'm going to guess that's what the case may be. Which will be interesting because, okay, I'll just, you know, my experience. When I was in Europe with the military, what amazed me wasn't the transportation that you found in the inner cities. I mean, of course, that was, you know, like any major city. But even the smallest town, 20 people out in the middle of nowhere, Bavaria, Germany, okay? 20 people would have, at the very least, a bus that stopped in that town 10 times a day on a weekday and 4 times a day on the weekend. That imagine the smallest, most remote town here in the state of Minnesota, Isabella. We'll go with Isabella up on the range. It's in between the Iron Range and the North Shore. It's just kind of out there by itself. And a lot of people heard about it because the fires were up that time by there. It is by itself. Imagine that if you lived in Isabella, you had a train, or you had a bus, at the very least a bus stopping by your town 4 times a day that would take you into the nearest local, the larger city. It's insane.
That would really help that town, I would think, attract people.
It was amazing. And you went to one of the joys of going to Europe is you can go into all these small towns and every one of them's got a gorgeous church and a lot of history. And it's great. In Minnesota, I mean, if you get out of the core areas, it is impossible in some places to get around. You know, it's you know, the reason why these, you know, these senior living centers have become popular is because they can't stay, you know, because there's no way for them to get to the grocery store or get to church. And their kids, for whatever reason, are not willing to step up and give them rides, or they're not around anymore. You know, think about that. Think about no matter where you're at, that you had a car, a bus or a train. And once again, in Germany, what would happen is all the small towns around a train route would be serviced by a bus and take you right to the train. So yeah, you could be in Isabella, get a bus to, say, to Virginia, Minnesota, take a train from Virginia to Duluth, and then jump on another train from Duluth to Minneapolis, and probably be there within 4 to 5 hours. That's how efficient the system is over there. It's a joke here. I mean, it really is. I mean, and it's to a point. If you could come up with an expansion, I actually kind of entertained the idea of Metro Mobility kind of expanding that program statewide and offering seniors the ability to just go to the grocery store, go to the medical appointments, go to church, whatever the case may be. I mean, that would be a good investment. And I don't think that this. And I'm going to be clear. I'm not saying that this train expansion is going to solve a lot of problems. I mean, it's going to at least be able to get you to north. It'll be interesting to see what the airline flights will cost to Chicago once you all of a sudden you have 24 options or 12 options a day to go from Minneapolis to Chicago on a train.
That's what I've at least seen with those trains currently between Minneapolis and Chicago, is that they look really expensive, like even more than getting on a plane.
Well,
I hope they could do something with the cost if they bring that up.
That's, I think, one of the major things here, is that the reason why those cost so much is because there's so few trains. And if there's more people riding the trains. The pillar routes would connect to regional transit centers across the area. The core, that would be Minneapolis, St. Paul, Chicago, would be a core express train. I don't know. I think it's a good idea. And truly, you know, you do have a lot of areas which are, you know, pretty, you know, Des Moines is kind of off by itself. And if you had a train that you didn't have to jump on a $500 flight to get out of Des Moines to St. Louis or something like that, I think people would jump at that opportunity in a heartbeat. We'll have to see if it comes to fruition. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Okay, Halloween. It is October. It's Friday. I'm going to get away from the rest of the news for the day. There is, in the Star Tribune, they do a kind of a history, blurb here on this and talk about, old history of the state. And I saw this. Now, we're going to have Bakken back on. Greg Bakken from Ghost Box Radio. We have to have him on sometime closer to Halloween. Of course. Get his. Come on. That's a no-brainer.
It was perfect this year. Hmm. Sunday is Halloween, so he gets to be live on Halloween for Ghost Box Radio.
Well, I don't mind being his Shaggy sometime. He wants to go do an investigation of a ghost house. I'll go on out there. Just, I hope you don't mind, me cracking jokes the entire time.
So you'd be the Shaggy and the Scooby of the group.
I don't think I'd be welcome. It's like, is that mantelpiece haunted? Is the fireplace haunted? Is the toilet haunted? Even the ghost would be like, oh, the hell with this guy. Some Minnesotans at the state fair this year were in a spooky state of mind, judging by their votes of the Star Tribune to tackle the hair-raising question, what's the most haunted place in Minnesota? Jennifer Carnahan's soul? No, I'm sorry. No, sorry. I'm just guessing. I have no idea. How empty and dark and barren that is. I have no idea. That creepy query emerged victorious among 100 questions fairgoers submitted during the Curious Minnesota Day at the State Fair building, part of the paper's community reporting project fueled by greater questions about the state. It outpolled timeless mysteries like, why is Jell-O served? Okay, for God's sakes, really? Why is Jell-O served at church potlucks? Why are car dealerships closed on Sunday in Minnesota? Okay, you put those questions up against what's the most haunted place, and you're surprised at what that one won. Not really. Well, fascinated by the Jell-O question. I could talk ghosts or Jell-O. Ghosts. The question is even more charged now that Halloween is approaching, but answering it is difficult because scores of locations around the state have reputations for being haunted. What was that, Paul Kozelka? Oh, no, nothing. Including remote cemeteries, spooky mansions, shuttered sanitariums, historic theaters, courthouses, battlefields, factories, breweries, caves, music venues, and hotels. No outhouses. No haunted outhouses. That's some tough detail you got pulled there. You're the... Oh, for goodness sakes. Really?
I would be haunting it, too, if I were stuck in an outhouse for eternity.
Use the air freshener. Ooh. Which can claim the most haunted title? The experts don't agree. Did they ask Bakken? I don't know if they did. Chad Lewis, co-author of the Minnesota Road Guide to Haunted Locations, says a contender would need to have a long history of haunting with multiple people reporting a ghost sighting. It's not one person who saw a deer man run across the street, said Lewis, an Eau Claire, Wisconsin author and lecturer. Where did the deer man run across the street? I want to hear about that. Of the places he's visited, Lewis thinks the historic Palmer House Hotel in Sauk Center should be in the running because it has a long history of being haunted in guest rooms, the bar, and the basement. He also suggested an isolated Loon Lake Cemetery in Lakefield, subject to ominous legends involving a beheaded witch and reports of paranormal activities. Okay. Who beheaded the witch? Come on. That's over the top. It's you're way too overzealous there. Loon, why would they? Why was there a witch in Loon Lake? At the Loon Lake? I mean, dude, man, what the hell happened down there? That was some drinking. That was the days before bath salts. That was just the grain alcohol talking right there. Why would you behead the witch? Stop it. It's not like it was there when the 1700s, 1800s, when the Salem witch trials were going on. What was it, just a slow day in the 1870s? Hey, I think Agatha over there is, she likes the moon. Phil, you got, Angus, you got your axe handy? All right. I'd be haunting it too. The area around Pipestone apparently has plenty of paranormal activity. Lewis said, including the Calumet Inn. Brady Junace, a member of the Twin Cities Paranormal Society, also thinks the Palmer House is dependably haunted. If you go to a haunted house, seriously, if you are going to the haunted house, I want some dependability on my hauntings.
I want that too. Yeah, I don't want any consistency when it comes to haunting.
All I had was slime. I didn't get touched. Sorry. I could use that line in a lot of different stories, but I'll just go with it there. It's full of light anomalies, according moving objects and mysterious voices, he said. It never seems to disappoint. Are any of the voices, hey, was that a ghost? Because I don't know if that's a ghost. He and the society have also had eerie experiences at Nopaming Sanatorium near Duluth, a former tuberculosis sanatorium, as well as the soap factory in Minneapolis, the former factory that became an arts venue and haunted house, one that reportedly had real ghosts. Now, okay, first of all, let's talk the sanatorium. What the hell are you doing? What are you doing? You want to go to the haunted hospital? Dude, your mind will run all over that.
Yeah.
I'm in an operating room. I don't want to be in an operating room over at Fairview Southdale, let alone the creepy old abandoned hospital. You're setting yourself up. It's like the cemetery. It's like, oh, really? Ghosts there? It's not that it's not creepy at all, and your mind's going to start playing tricks on you. Go to the sanatorium. Yeah, just wondering why. Yeah, I'm wondering why too. Why the hell are you going there? Doesn't seem like a place you. They had tuberculosis there. You touch anything, can you get sick of? I don't know how long. Soap factory. I was in the soap factory. Someone said to me one time. This is back when they did the haunted soap factory. They did the haunted basement there. And the guy says, "Come on by." He says, "You're not gonna believe how haunted this place is." I was there for like an hour. I didn't see squat. I saw some artists that looked a little sketchy. I can be honest with you. Yeah, you're letting him in here? All right, well. Is he a good artist? Okay. I didn't see it. For a place that everyone that I talked to, they were saying soap factory is it. I didn't see anything there. And I'm not saying that some people, I saw there. Well, when everyone's telling you the entire time, it's the most haunted place ever. Oh, you're going to be scared to death. It's haunted. We even do haunted houses down here. I mean, aren't you setting yourself, aren't you kind of massaging the old mind to kind of get to where you want to go with that? We should, and consider the Christie home, advised Adrian Lee, a ghost hunter from Wyndham, who wrote a book about hauntings at the former doctor's residence in Long Prairie. Okay, once again, back to the doctors. Well, they had to chop off people's limbs here. I wonder if it's haunted. Well, thanks for setting up the table for me. I think you got it. I always like these ghost stories, these ghost shows that go out there. And it's like, we're going to have this guy. We're going to lock you in one of the morgue freezers. Why? Why are you doing that? Seriously, what? Just tormenting that poor guy. I don't like it here. I wouldn't like it there either. It's not meant for humans. They don't have any complaints because the people that are usually in there are dead. We took a photograph of a ghost, said Lee, founder of a group called the International Paranormal Society. Okay, so what is this photo look like? Is it like you guys all lined up like you're a bunch of college guys and there's a ghost there like with his haunted hands on either side of you going, cheese? No, I doubt that. It's kind of blurry. I mean, does it look like Grover Cleveland or Chester A. Arthur? I mean, if it looks like Chester A. Arthur, okay, maybe we're getting somewhere. But it's a smear. And look, that smear, that's a ghost. Is it? Or is it just bad photographic equipment maintenance? I think that might be it. They got a ghost, though. And yet another haunted home. The St. James in Red Wing. I have been to the St. James Hotel in Red Wing. No ghost.
Nothing for you. Okay.
A lovely hotel. Very cool building. Very cool building. Creek, you know, I appreciate hotels in old buildings. But if the floor creaks where people are walking down, I mean, that's annoying. And that did creak. Now, did I think it was ghosts? No, I just thought it was the guy who was out at the sports bar catching the latest, Vikes game. Comes stumbling back into the hotel late at night and creaking the floor. I didn't think it was a ghost. I didn't have any, ghostly experiences. Let's just put it that way.
None for Elka?
None there. I've been in two of these places and 0 for 2 at this point. There's really no objective measure that can say this is the most haunted, said Brad Radford, deputy editor of Skeptical Inquirer. God, jeez, really? A science magazine that examines paranormal claims. Another problem, there's no consensus of what ghosts are, even among ghost hunters. They can't even agree what they're looking for, Radford said. Science can never prove that ghosts don't exist, but a lot of people have been trying to prove that they do for a very long time, and no one has succeeded yet. This is from Randy Fletcher, University of Minnesota, associate professor of psychology who teaches honors a seminar called The Psychology of Paranormal Phenomenon. To my mind, it makes it very unlikely that ghosts are real, Fletcher said, calling ghost hunting an exercise in confirmation bias. People go looking for evidence for that some place is haunted, and they find it. In other words, if you believe in ghosts, you're more likely the otherwise mundane occurrence to the coincidence. A funny smell, a strange noise, a blur on a photograph is evidence of the haunting.
Wait, a funny smell?
A funny smell. Well, I got news for you. Don't come into the studio because it could be haunted right now. Sorry.
Ghost has some digestive issues.
Got a bean soup for lunch. I mean, it's, or ghosts. It's one of the two. I'll let you figure that one out. Basically, a lot of people say it's the caves. We found the stories about the hauntings at First Avenue, Glensheen Mansion, Ramsey County Courthouse, the Lexington and Forepaws, but the winner was the Wabasha Street Caves. Over the decades, the historic man-made caves near downtown St. Paul have been a silica mine, a mushroom farm, a speakeasy, a nightclub, a pizza joint, and most recently an event center and swing dance venue, which also gangster and ghost tours. Within days of taking possession of the cave, she started hearing voices when working late at night, and she thought there was the only one there. I've actually seen a ghost in the cave, the cave tour guide Deborah Fentham says. It's definitely haunted. I have tons of personal experiences in the caves. I've heard the caves are kind of creepy. I've been in the caves. I didn't see any ghosts. Didn't see any mushrooms either. I thought it was a mushroom farm. Where are the mushrooms? Where's the pizza?
Yeah, they're...
Came here for pizza and mushrooms, and you tell me a ghost story? Come on. Uh-oh. Do I smell another ghost? Yeah. Oh, it's gonna be a haunted studio when I'm done. Sorry. Bakken, we need... the only person I trust with this is Greg Bakken. We need Bakken in here.
You know what's funny about this? He was actually going to be streaming a paranormal investigation last night of the Anderson House in Wabasha.
Okay.
And it got canceled because apparently the entire town of Wabasha lost power just as they were going to do it. So that strikes me as being maybe a little haunted.
No, that's just bad electrical maintenance, okay?
Oh, you don't think it's maybe the ghost thing? I don't want to be investigated.
So wait a minute. So when did the ghost get an advanced knowledge of electrical systems? Okay, the ghost, it's a ghost of a farmhand who now all of a sudden understands nuclear power. Oh, okay, thanks.
Well, you got a lot of time on their hands.
Apparently it's a community college there in the afterlife. Off you go. 952-946-6205. We'll do some dancing when I come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Oh, I got to get the Lysol ghost detector out here to make sure we don't smell any more ghosts, all right? All right. You have a good weekend. We are going to be back here on Monday. Be safe. Get vaccinated. Taking us out. A little dance in the romantics. It's what I like about you on AM 950. Have a good one. Until Monday. See ya.